Welcome to another episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. Now, usually you're aware of my co-host, Jordan, but unfortunately, last episode, was Jordan's final episode with the show. And I wish him all the best in his future endeavors. I thank him for his time and his effort with the podcast. And I hope that whatever he chooses to do next is fulfilling for him. Having said that, I don't want to do this alone because that would be rather boring. Just listening to me talk on my own. And so when looking for a new co-host, I looked for a couple of things. I wanted somebody that was as passionate as I was and as Jordan was for DC and DC Comics, DC entertainment, and different forms of media that DC inhabits. And I wanted somebody who wasn't so singularly focused on one particular area of DC entertainment. And also, I wanted somebody who could commit and be my co-host for the long haul. And so in looking at that criteria, I am happy to welcome my new co-host, Travis Hines, to the show. Travis, how's it going?
Going great, Adam. Thanks for having me, and I couldn't be more excited to start this off and just keep going with all the glorious DC content that we have today. It almost seems like too much, but it's never too much.
Yeah, we live in a fantastic time for DC, that's for sure. Now, you were a guest on the show previously.
I think we reviewed the Black Lightning pilot. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah, so that was last year. And we wanted to get you on again, and here you are in a official permanent capacity.
Yeah, I was a permanent subscriber to the podcast anyway, and I must say you guys have great. You had great discussions, great guests, and I couldn't be more excited to be part of this now. Plus, I like your view on all things DC. You don't sugarcoat it. You just say what you like and what you don't like. And I appreciate that. So I'm really excited to get started with you.
Well, you got to be honest. And that's my motto. Just tell it like it is. And not everybody's going to like your opinion, but that's all right. You just got to tell it. But like you said, call it like you see it. So that's what we'll do here. And we'll continue to have the guests on that you were so fond of, and those will continue. So nothing changes in that regard. But in case people either didn't listen to your previous episode, shame on them, first of all, for not listening. Second of all, in case they listened and they forgot since the last time, let's get to know a little bit more about you in terms of your DC fandom. So You've done podcasting and stuff before, correct?
Yeah, I got into podcasts after BVS in 2016. I was just finding, like, I thoroughly enjoy that movie. I understand people have their gripes and concerns about it, and if you don't like it, that's fine. I'm not going to try and convince you or anything like that. But I was seeing a lot of negativity in the podcasting world in the shows that I would look at. Yeah. So I found this Suicide Squadcast podcast.
Yeah, those guys are great, yeah.
I was hooked. They're not forced and everything, but they were just positive about what they were talking about. So after that, I found a few more, including the DC. It was once Daily Drop. Now it's just called the DC Drop with Tom and Zach. I've done like 50 episodes with them, mostly last year's DC TV lineup. We reviewed every show. Cool. And now I have a little side hustle podcast of my own, just like 5 to 7 minute episodes about my thoughts of, like, the week that was with DC TV and some trailers, Scatter Time. It'll probably be dialed back a nice bit now that I'm joining you on this. But still, for just short thoughts when I'm in my car, it's kind of a great way to throw it out there. So if you, any listeners want to jump into that, it's called Superhero Discussions. You'll find it on all your podcasting apps. So that was pretty much how I got into podcasting. How I got into DC was Batman 89. Mm. I watched that, I think it was, I was four at the time I watched it on VHS. And I gotta say, I love that movie now, but it scared the ever-loving bejesus out of a four-year-old Travis and gave me so many nightmares about the Joker kidnapping my family. Batman, it was almost the same nightmare every time. The Joker would kidnap my family in my grandmother's house, and Batman would burn to save them and then get shot by the Joker, and then I would wake up. I think it was some combination of that scene where Bruce Wayne goes crazy and gets shot, and Batman and Joker in the movie. I think that all coalesced into a four-year-old's nightmare.
So Batman didn't make out well in your dream then? Huh?
Not initially, no. I was really scared. I was.
So it's like an Elseworld. It's an Elseworld story, yeah.
I was more a Ninja Turtle kid.
Oh, yeah.
Then by the time Returns came out and Batman the Animated Series came out, that was it. That Batman the Animated Series is what hooked me to all things comic book, really.
Okay, and so...
It's just the quintessential show. It's like, that's what got me into DC, and I pretty much love almost everything DC with some things I'm not really a fan of, and you won't hear much talk about relationships in the shows from me as well. So,
you're not a shipper then? Eh?
No,
I'm good. Neither am I.
That's good.
Aside from the fact that it's Klaus and Lana are Klaus. Clark and Lois are the preeminent couple in the DC universe.
I will not argue with you. Maybe you might be able to get somebody to talk Barry and Iris.
Yeah, but
Superman Lois is the go-to.
Superman Lois is the be-all, end-all in terms of relationships. There are no substitutes.
Nope.
and anybody who thinks otherwise needs to check themselves at the door and realize that is the quintessential pillar of relationship wise. And I would argue that number two is Oliver and Dinah, not Felicity, Dinah. No. And then number three, as you mentioned, for me would be Wally and Barry and Iris.
I think I'll sign off on that top three actually.
There you go. But we will never use you. You'll never hear me use ridiculous, immature shipper names for them.
No.
I don't do that. Like I want them together, but I don't obsess over them or watch YouTube videos nonstop and stuff like that. That's not me. So if storylines come up where those are a big deal, we'll talk about them. But it'll never be in a ridiculous manner such as that. That's where you go to Tumblr. And I guess on Twitter if you want that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I'm sure that there are plenty of accounts that will service that need for you, but it won't be happening here. But let me ask you: so you mentioned Batman 89. So is that your? Would you say that is your favorite? What is your favorite DC live action movie? Let's put it that way.
It was 89, but BVS actually it was 89. Then Begins. I still argue Batman Begins is the best Batman movie, best origin film, and just centered around Batman is the quintessential film. But my favorite superhero film is BVS, the Ultimate Edition. But I just love Ben Affleck's performance, and I really just enjoyed a story where I honestly think that some of those things would happen if Superman actually came to the light of day in a 2016 United States with Donald Trump. I can see a lot of what BVS is trying to say. People will fear Superman. I can see that big time, but the way that the political landscape is right now, that's why one reason why I enjoyed the movie. But there's not too many I don't enjoy. Maybe Batman and Robin. I'm not a big fan of that one, but I don't think there's many people that are.
Well, most people are. Okay, good. And then, if we're going to go, let me ask you another question. Animation. What is your favorite animated series? And then, along with that, favorite animated movie.
Ooh, there's a lot of good. I almost feel like it's blasphemous for me to not say Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, you can say whatever you want. Nobody's going to judge you.
I I think Justice League is probably my favorite, and I would argue is one of the best. The first run of not the Unlimited, even though that was pretty cool with storylines, but the first Justice League, just seeing those seven characters together, I never expected it. And back then, we didn't have social media trailers. We had no, well, I had no idea this was coming.
Yeah.
I just get home, yeah. Same here. Friday night, I turn on Cartoon Network, and what do you see? It is Secret Origins, part 1, 2, and 3, straight through a movie. And I was hooked on that, and I can't even tell you how many times I've watched every episode of Justice League since then.
Well, it'll come in handy for when we do the Justice League reviews down the line.
Oh, I'm sure I'll do a rewatch then as well.
Yeah, for sure. And then in terms of an animated movie, do you have one?
I want to say maybe Under the Red Hood, I think. If I'm just off the top of my head, I'm going to go with Batman Under the Red Hood.
Listen, nobody's going to argue with that choice. That's fantastic. I know Scott from the Suicide Squad cast will definitely not argue that because he loves that movie.
Oh, it's just fantastic. And so, as someone who didn't start reading comics until late, well, most comics, immediately after seeing that, I dove down the Red Hood rabbit hole in the comic book storyline. And I got to say, a lot of these animated movies have made me do that after seeing them, especially with Green Lantern. I immediately dove into Green Lantern just the way that Brent from Fans Without Borders loves Green Lantern. I dove in and got so deep into Green Lantern after watching that first animated movie. That's one of the things I enjoy about them.
Sure, awesome. And then, well, speaking that you brought it up. Okay, now you brought up comics. So we usually do comic book recommendations. I'm not going to ask you for that yet. That's a little bit later in a minute. But in terms of favorite overall comic book you've ever read, do you have one?
Yep.
All right, what is that?
It is Watchmen.
All right, cool. So you must be over the moon about the HBO series coming out.
Very excited. And they're not giving us anything so far. I've got a
Which is great.
I'm okay with that, especially with the amount of shows we have on TV already. And we all know that if HBO is producing the show will be good. We don't have to worry about money. We don't have to worry about special effects. None of that stuff. That's all going to be taken care of, because also the company who owns HBO now is merged with the company that owned DC. So they have a whole reach for this show. So I am so excited, and I can't wait to see an older Ozymandias. That's the big thing. Jeremy Irons, get at me.
and of course we'll be reviewing that when that airs. So
For sure.
So that'll be something fun to go through with you as well. Okay, good. So we've covered all. I think we've covered most of the bases here then, in terms of your favorites.
Yeah.
So that's a good little primer on Travis. So you've gotten to know him a little bit better. And how about we? Now that we've done that, we get to business here. As everybody knows, we have an Aquaman movie on the horizon, and according to my countdown clock, as of this recording, we are, let's see here, 15 days away from Aquaman.
That is certain, but we have showings coming out, I want to say...
Yeah, some people
nine days away on the 15th.
Amazon Prime people. But I'm not one of those people.
I'm definitely not one of those people. We only have two movie theaters in the province. In the capital city I live in.
Yeah. So some of our listeners are going to be lucky enough to see it on the 15th, which is 9 days away. But everybody else will have to wait, as of this recording, 15 more days. But it's either way, it is upon us, my friend. And
get your Thursday night tickets while you still can.
And I couldn't be more excited. I'm actually going on the Friday. I'm going on an afternoon show.
Might go a second time, because I'm going Thursday night, and I am definitely calling in sick on Friday. Yeah, I may go to the
it's the Aquaman flu. It's the Aquaman. But yeah, so that's exciting, and it's getting closer and closer, which is great. It's been a long time coming, and with every teaser and TV spot, it looks better and better. So
I have to agree, and it's also nice to see a lot of positivity behind this movie, especially after the last movie that we've had for DC fans. Now, I enjoyed the movie. I'll argue that I know that there's stuff that could have been better.
Of course.
But Justice League left a sour taste in the mouth because of what you've seen in some of the trailers you didn't see on the screen.
Right.
So I can understand that. But we all know that what we're seeing in these Aquaman trailers, we're getting come the 21st.
Yeah. It's really like I said, it looks better and better with every piece of footage, which I'm trying to now start avoiding footage because I want to go in there as fresh as possible. But nonetheless, I cannot wait, and it's cool that you echo my sentiments there. So usually at this portion of the show, we do comic book recommendations. Travis, is there anything you've read recently that you want to recommend?
I just finished, I can't remember what volume it was. I've been reading Green Arrow Rebirth.
And
if anyone has been reading Green Arrow Rebirth, I don't think the ending to the most recent Arrow episode would have surprised anyone. I kind of rode into the DC TV Squadcast and told them after the first episode of the newest season who I thought the new Green Arrow was. And if anyone reads the Green Arrow Rebirth comics, you would know who I am talking about.
Yes.
Because she is in it. She is a big focus in it. And that would probably be my biggest recommendation right now. I'm still enjoying the run, and I'm not quite finished. So that would be the comic that I would recommend people to get on while you still can.
Cool. So Green Arrow, I am reading it, and I will echo that it's been good. I think throughout the run.
I agree. Especially, yeah. I enjoyed the first volume where they had Emin Friars, who callback was the villain of the flashbacks in season one of Arrow on the island. He's a bit different here, but it's just cool to see little things like that as I watched the show, Arrow didn't pick up on back in the day.
Yeah.
But cool. Now that I've read the comics, I was like, oh, cool. He's okay. Yeah, they didn't make him up. He actually came from comics. Okay. So it's just a little rewarding like that. So.
Nice. Good recommendation.
Thanks.
And I will, I've mentioned this book a few times on my comic recommendation, but it keeps being so phenomenal that I have to recommend the most recent issue. And that is Batman Beyond issue 26. It's the next chapter in the return of the original Joker to the Batman Beyond universe. And there's some great interplay with with Batman and Robin working as a team. Of course, this Batman and Robin being Terry McGinnis and his brother Matt, who just recently took up the mantle of Robin. So there's good interplay there. And there's also a really special moment, not necessarily in a good way, but it's a very unique moment when Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson are told that the original Joker is back by Barbara Gordon, who is now the commissioner of police. Their reactions are quite. It suggests that interesting things are to come. And what happens on the very last page with the Joker is a callback to a very well-known story. And it bodes for some very frightening prospects for the future or for the new Robin going forward. So we'll see how that plays out. But definitely, if you're not reading this title, definitely consider checking out Batman Beyond. For my money, it is the best solo Batman book on the stands right now.
Well, that's a good recommendation as well. I think I might have to check that out. I'm not onto that one so far. Most times I wait from the finish, but
yeah. Well, start with it. Have you read any of it at all?
I haven't. I'm completely new.
The rebirth.
No.
Well, maybe check out volume one and go from there.
I think I'm definitely going to do that.
See how you like that.
You won me over with the description.
it's a good book. It's a really good book. Even the stuff pre Joker is really good. So yeah.
Well, that's essentially sounded a lot like the Batman Beyond movie we had with Return of the Joker. We knew that wasn't the actual Joker.
Yeah.
But still, what you're saying, like the reactions that Bruce and we don't see Dick, but we see Barbara have, are kind of what you're describing there.
Yeah. Well, this is from all we've been told so far. This is the actual Joker, so that's the difference between.
Yeah, I guess another one I would say would be the Doomsday Clock that just came out with the most recent issue, and I've been loving that.
Yeah, well, and you know what the cool thing about that is, I've been buying the issues, but I haven't read them yet because I'm waiting for the whole series to complete, and then I'm going to read it in one sitting.
That's a great idea, man.
So maybe what we could do, actually, is we'll make that an episode and we'll review Doomsday Clock when it's finished.
Oh, I'm 100% down. I've after jotting down notes of every issue.
Because what the idea going into the new year was that we were going to focus on doing comic reviews more often, like full-fledged comic reviews more often. And we were going to invite on Ryan Huseman for some of them as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm 100% down for that.
So I want to make that a regular occurrence in the new year. And it sounds like you're up for that. So that's good.
Yeah, most definitely.
Those are our comic recommendations for this week. We hope you'll check them out. And if you do, we hope you will enjoy them. But why don't we get into the news, shall we?
Oh, let's do that.
All right, so we're going to start with some movie news, as we typically do here. Earlier, I think it was, or at the tail end of last week, after we had recorded, there was a report via The Wrap and Humberto Gonzalez, better known to many as El Mayimbe, that... Warner Brothers was in development on a Blue Beetle film with Mexican-born writer Gareth Dune Alcocer. I think, I don't know, I probably butchered that name, but it is what it is. I apologize if I did. He's writing the script, and he's written the most recent draft of the Scarface reboot that's being worked on. So he's the writer, and it said in the report that the film is going to focus on the Jaime Reyes version of the Blue Beetle, which is the third character to hold the Blue Beetle mantle in the comic books. Travis, what do you think of this news that Blue Beetle film with Jaime Reyes is in development at Warner Bros.?
I think that is a smart move by DC and Walter Hamada. Because I was reading or maybe I was listening to a podcast where I was told that the people that frequent movie theaters the most are Latino people, and it's like it's 4.5 movies a year, their average. So this just makes perfect sense. The second one was Asians, so I want to say that like hitting those markets kind of makes sense for WB. Just see this, like, I'm sure it'll be successful. Now, we want to, like, a little nugget with that, because we've had a lot of movies over the past couple of years in development for DC that we never see the light of day. But it seems like with Walter Hamada, when he gives you the go ahead, if it's good, he'll push it through.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to wait on the script to see how that, because there are a lot of different properties in development.
But this is just another good thing. We need more representation for all cultures. It shouldn't just be a white Blue Beetle.
Yeah, I know.
This seems like a good move for DC, and just DC's been hitting all the right notes for me, movie wise, for what they're picking and what they're like getting to. Besides a Man of Steel sequel, but we will not get into that can of worms today.
No, this one makes sense because you, like you said, the stat about the you know, Latinos and their movie viewing habits and the percentage that go to the movie. But also, if you look at the films, you know, look at Wonder Woman, right? Look at crazy rich Asians, right? Diversity is important in today's, it should have always been important, but now it's finally coming to the forefront. And you know, the movies that are able to showcase that and showcase it well are being rewarded and being seen. I mean, like a lot of people maybe don't necessarily think of this, but I contend that one of the reasons why Suicide Squad was the big hit that it was because of the representation that it featured. I mean, Killer Croc was played by a person of color.
Same with Deadshot.
Same with Will Smith as Deadshot. We had Katana was played by an Asian American actress, which is obvious. They should. I mean, if they would have erased Ben, that role would have been stupid. That I think brought a lot of different, a wider range of audience to the table for Suicide Squad. In that respect alone, I think Warner Bros. Is smart in looking at Blue Beetle. And also, when I posted this news on the Facebook page, we got some suggestions where, Ryan Huseman, who is my co-host on the other, one of the other podcasts on this network, suggests that he sees a situation developing like Ant-Man, where, it's a legacy character. So Jaime Reyes would be the equivalent of Scott Lang's character in Ant-Man. And then Ted Kord could take the original Hank Pym role like it was in Ant-Man, right, where he mentored him and stuff. And so Ryan thinks we're going to get a situation like that. And then Stephen Marshall, who is our international correspondent on the show, suggests that they take inspiration from the fall of the Blue Beetle storyline from Batman: The Brave and the Bold, and had, which features Jaime Reyes going in search of missing Ted Kord. So those are two avenues that people associated with this network think it could go, and I think those are smart avenues to potentially take. But of all the projects that are in development at Warner Bros., I think this one has a really good chance of making it through the development process and onto our screens. So we will definitely be keeping an eye on this one.
Yeah, any DC property gets us excited, but I really think they could do something special with this. And I like Ryan's idea. I really think that would be a pretty cool way to do it. Have Ted Kord, shepherd him through being Blue Beetle. I'd like for Jaime to be chosen and Ted Kord not have any say in who gets chosen, but just have to run with it. Like that, maybe he might want somebody else, but the Beetle always chooses the person. So I would hope something like that happens, where you have a little inner conflict between them at the start too.
Cool. Yeah. There was an article in Deadline, or on Deadline, I should say, where they mentioned about how, female-led superhero movies were were sort of coming to the forefront. And they, in that report, it was casually mentioned that there is a Zatanna movie in early stages of development at Warner Brothers, or they're having discussions about putting a Zatanna movie into the development. What do you think about that?
I think, yet again, another smart move by Warner Brothers, but I also don't think we're going to see any movement on a Zatanna movie until, if Birds of Prey is positively received and critically a success and financially a success, I 100% can see a Zatanna movie. But if Birds of Prey like doesn't perform as well and gets bashed by the critics, then I wouldn't hold my breath for a Zatanna movie. But like you, like there's a whole lot of stuff you can do with that, especially with her father as well. So you can at least get one film out of it. I think it just depends on the performance of Birds of Prey.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, I think Birds of Prey and Wonder Woman will certainly help the cause.
Yeah.
For a Zatanna movie, if both are successful, and I suspect that both will be. We will, you know, hopefully hear more about that once those two movies grace our screen. But there's not really much on that front as of yet, so we will move on. So apparently Margot Robbie has another film coming out. And as a result, she's been doing the promotional tour kind of thing. And I think she was on two outlets. She was on, was it Jimmy Fallon, right?
Yeah.
And Good Morning America, correct?
Yeah, I think those are both of them.
Yeah, and so basically she was asked about the title being Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. So they were asking her if that was real, to which she replied that it was. And she went further to say, she said, look, our movie is not a very serious movie. So we thought the title should reflect that. And she clarified by saying, if it was just called Birds of Prey, that would quantify something very serious. And for general audiences who don't know what Birds of Prey is, right, just hearing that name floating around, and you could get confused as to what is that? Is that like some sort of nature documentary? Like, what could that be, right? If, imagine you see just a poster, and all it is the title, and all it was Birds of Prey. I think most general audiences would be confused.
Oh, I agree. And I think once you put Harley Quinn in the title, there's no confusion. You know, it's a DC property. Harley Quinn is not even a statement that Harley Quinn was the biggest thing of Suicide Squad. Arguably one of the biggest things of the DCEU to come out of the DCEU is Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
So, and I've seen you say this, I want to say in a tweet, if Margot Robbie wants a character in Birds of Prey, it's going to be in Birds of Prey.
Oh yeah.
If she wants to do a movie with another character, she's going to do a movie with another character. It seems like she got free reign there, and rightfully so, because she was a big success story of the movie. And now I'm curious to see if she can hold her own with this full, like, basically, we're putting a lot on Harley Quinn's back. And I'm positive the character can live up to it. I just hope that it's written well. But this is rated R, isn't it?
Yeah, now here's the thing, because a lot of fans are like, oh, look, she's saying it's not very serious, but they're missing the point. She clarified that Birds of Prey on its own sounds like very serious, so the inclusion of Harley Quinn suggests, but there's also some levity there. And what I think she means, my interpretation of this quote is this, that much like the comic books, right, Harley Quinn, whenever she's added to a story, adds some humor and levity to a situation. And I think that's what's going to be the case with the film. So, you know, Huntress and Black Canary will be the more serious, sort of darker skewing characters, with Harley bringing the humor. And I don't see anything wrong with that. And I don't see anything that is worth freaking out over those statements.
People freak out over anything these days. Like you just said, I don't understand why you're getting so up in arms over a title.
Like it seems to line up with what Harley does in the comics. So I don't understand what the issue is.
Yeah, that's pretty much her personality, especially like her. I would say it looks like Harley Quinn's writing at like that.
Yeah.
And a kiss from her that looks like, like you said, that's exactly something that the character would do.
Which I take a kiss from my Earth 3 multiverse wife, Margot Robbie, any day of the week. But
I know we can't have that. Like you'll die.
Yeah, well,
your heart will literally stop.
That's Earth 3, but that's Earth 3 me. So Earth,
okay, yeah.
Me will still be here. Or I could travel to Earth 3 and then take over from that Earth's
there you go. You just gotta start learning how to vibrate at a different frequency.
Yeah, and I know our international correspondent loves when I mention the multiverse wives. So I keep that.
I didn't know you had so many. I'll tell the listeners now.
I
watched the Hawk and Dove episode of Titans, I immediately wrote Adam and said, I don't know about Harley Quinn or Margot Robbie, but I got a feeling that Mina Kelly is going to be your new wife. And you just immediately said, yeah, she's my Earth 4 wife anyway.
It's Earth 5. It's Earth 5. Oh. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. So yeah, there's a list and there will be an episode like counting down this list.
I think that will be a fun episode.
Down the road. So that's the situation with the Harley Quinn title. I thought we'd touch on that. But it seems like we're in agreement. Anything you want to add on that, or you want to move on here?
Maybe people calm down a little bit until you see a trailer or some scenes or
pictures. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah, it sounds like a plan. Speaking of... sort of in the Batman world, Chris McKay, the director of the Lego Batman movie and the Whenever the Heck It Happens Nightwing movie, responded to a Twitter question where a fan asked if we were going to get a sequel to the Lego Batman movie, to which he said they are working on that right now, but Lego Batman will first appear in the second Lego movie. And then they'll spin off into another Lego Batman movie. What are your thoughts on a second go-around with Lego Batman?
I don't see why not after the success of the first one. And I'm just curious, what we were talking about before the show, off-air, that I thought that maybe this means that Chris McKay won't be doing a Nightwing for a while. But you informed me, which makes a lot of sense, that they're probably going to wait until Reeves gets his first Batman movie out before they decide what to do with Nightwing. So maybe this is just here. In the meantime, Chris, just kill another one of these Lego movies to build up your credentials a little bit more and just make a bit more money for yourself while we wait. You're still our guy for Nightwing, but we're waiting on that a little bit.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's doing Dungeons and Dragons right now. The movie, right, for Paramount, and then he'll come on and probably do Lego Batman 2, and then after that, hopefully by then, Nightwing will be ready to go, because we'll have some news on Matt Reeves Batman, and things will sort of start to coalesce from there. So yeah, I really enjoyed the first Lego Batman movie, to see a follow-up, I'm all for it.
The same, I can't wait.
And then, before we move on to TV news, our final piece of film news is that over the last couple of days, we've gotten two new posters for Shazam. One is a piece of comic art that is basically features Billy Batson turning into Shazam. And that poster is drawn by comic book artist Ivan Reyes. There's also a more traditional teaser poster with Shazam sort of leaning against the background, against the red and gold background, He's checking his cell phone and chewing or making a bubble with some bubble gum. And the poster says, just say the word. What do you think of these two posters, Travis?
I love them. I love the comic art one. I think that it is amazingly drawn, and they look like both the actors that are portraying the roles in the movie. But I really enjoy the one with Zachary Levi, and I don't think you can get a better tagline for a Shazam movie than just say the word.
Simple, yeah.
Short, sweet, and right to the point. I think that's perfect.
Yeah, here's my take. I really love the comic art inspired one. I love that artist to boot, so it only made it better. And again, it's really sort of hinting at what you're going to see in the film with the transition between the two characters. And then in the second one, you know, they basically took, it seems like they've taken two promotional images. You know, because one banner we saw with him on just chewing the gum, and the other one we saw with him looking at the cell phone. So it's a combination of the two, you know, with him in a different pose. But again, the color of the suit and the look of the suit is so vibrant, and it really pops. And that tagline, just say the word, is great. And it reminds, you know what tagline it reminds me of?
What one?
You'll believe a man can fly.
No, so, nice.
And I think, you know, people may call me crazy. I think that this is going to capture the imagination of young and older audiences in a similar way, the way Superman 78 did.
I think you could be right there. And I'm getting hella Man of Steel suit vibes from his suit. Like the red,
yeah.
It looks so much like the blue from the Superman suit, like form fitting to his body. I could look at that suit all day.
Yeah, it looks great. Looks great. So Zachary Levi did say that we would be getting a trailer early next year. So probably in January is my guess, because it comes out April 5th. So, you know, January probably is a good
yeah date. Well, we'll get one then and one the couple weeks before 3 weeks before the movie,
so we both seem to really like these posters, and can't wait for Shazam, which is one of our 2019 movies, because remember Aquaman is still 2018.
Yeah,
so Shazam is one of our 2019 movies, along with Joker, which just recently finished filming. So that is done filming, and now it's on to post-production. And that went rather smoothly, without a hitch. So hopefully early in the new year, we'll see some stuff from that as well.
The Joker movie, it has to be the movie that has the most pictures taken from it, like on set. But yeah, with no knowledge of anything that's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I've seen Joaquin Phoenix about 80 different pictures of him as Joker walking in the street, sitting up, having a smoke, just doing anything.
But we know nothing
about the movie.
I think that one's tied with Suicide Squad. Remember when Suicide Squad was out, there was pictures left, right, and center?
Yeah, I do remember that, actually.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll get more from those two movies in the new year. Moving on to some TV news. As we know, Elseworlds is airing in just a few days, or starts airing in just a few days. And we've gotten three new things associated with Elseworlds. We've gotten the banner, the social media banner, with all the characters on it, which looks very much like the first Avengers poster, if you think about it.
Yeah, most definitely.
But it has all the characters on it, including two Supermen, the red and blue wearing Superman and the black costumed Superman. What do you think of this poster?
Oh, I loved it. I I thought it was right up there with the one last year, the comic book art one we got from the Crisis on Earth X. And like you said, there's two Supermen there, which looks amazing, and I just can't wait for Sunday. We're so close now.
Yeah. And just a reminder, it starts airing Sunday, December the 9th. First episode will be The Flash. Then Monday, the 10th at 8 p.m. will be Arrow, which is part two. And then part three will be Tuesday at 8 p.m., which will be Supergirl. We also got a extended trailer for Elseworlds. What did you think of that?
Oh, I loved it. I loved seeing Barry and Oliver switch Freaky Friday. Only two of them know that they're both changed. I love that idea. And I was listening to the Flash 100th episode, like the celebration they had, and apparently Greg Berlanti was the one that came up with this idea.
Yeah, well, it's a great idea. And I mean, most of the extended scenes were them trying to explain to the others that they're you know,
they're not each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was cool. And we see a very quick glimpse of Ruby Rose as Kate Kane outside of her suit, but it's literally blink and you miss it.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, of course, there's them going to Gotham and sort of uncovering the bat signal, which is always cool to see. That's a great bat signal, by the way.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. Okay. And I just can't wait to get explanations of what happened to Batman. We know we got a vague explanation. I'm hoping we get more kind of like Batman, I want to say Bad Blood. Maybe that's the animated movie where he disappears and Batwoman takes over for a while.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I think that I want to have her give an explanation like that. Like she thinks she's seen Batman die. And that's why she's continuing on the fight in his honor. Maybe it's because he saved her before she thinks he's died. And we just got to throw this out there now. Them speaking Batman, them saying Batman, we haven't really had that in the Arrowverse, DCCW, very often, minus Supergirl. And this just opens up the possibility for me of one day finally seeing Batman, which is all I want.
Yeah, but I will gladly take Batwoman and more on
that. Oh, for now, yeah, Batwoman and the Rogues. The one thing I had a question about, I don't know if you've seen the picture that was dropped yesterday of Stephen Amell's wife as Nora.
Nora Freeze, yeah.
Looking in the, I guess, some of the stuff, like we've seen Bane's mask there as she's looking at.
Yeah, it's an Arkham storage facility kind of thing, yeah.
I'm just curious, are they going to change this around so that she ends up becoming a rogue of Batwoman? And if that's the case, would we end up seeing her again in that series as well?
That's a couple of question marks I have for myself. Well, that's a possibility.
I think it depends on reception and her performance, but
at the very least, it opens up the door for Mr. Freeze as a villain.
Yeah, unless he's dead, we don't know. Maybe he's gone, and she picks up the mantle and becomes Mrs. Freeze.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see it either way. And I'd be okay with either of them.
Oh, same here. Maybe we get Mrs. Freeze, but eventually Mr. Freeze comes back. He's not dead.
Yeah.
So we could have our cake and eat it too.
And I just want to say that Bane mask that's sitting there on that shelf looks 1,000 times better than the Bane version on Gotham.
The people in Gotham should have snuck in to the DCCW offices.
Look, I love Gotham. I've gone on record and saying I embrace the fact.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's in Elseworlds and it's crazy, and I embrace all that. But good God Almighty, like, there's no denying that. I mean, you have to be.
They didn't even need to introduce Bane. That's what I don't.
But it just
I'm not going to get into that.
It looks terrible. That's all I'm saying. But and I'm like, yeah, even just a Bane mask. And I realize it's probably just a prop from Dark Knight Rises, but like even sitting on a shelf looks 10 times better than what they got on the poor actor's face. But I digress. We also got at the end of each Arrowverse show episode, well, at least the three that are involved in the crossover, we got a little end credit sequence setting up the crossover. And it features this, well, it takes us to Earth 90. So there's more than 52 Earths in this Arrowverse. And which means I at least have 90 multiverse-wise by that token. So we zoom into Earth 90, and it's this post-apocalyptic sort of just destruction scene where there are like dead bodies of different heroes on the ground, and the camera continues to track, and we see the Flash crawling around, you know, on his hands and knees, trying to get this. And by the way, as we see more of the Flash, we see that it's John Wesley Shipp dressed in the 90s Flash costume. And so he's crawling towards this big book, you know, the big book that we've seen in the promo images and the trailers. But the monitor comes in and picks it up and basically starts saying, you failed. And then, you know, Barry says, why are you doing this? And he says, you've done this to yourself, and now you all perish. And he opens the book, and this you see this sort of like this light emanating from the book, and then all of a sudden, Flash musters all the energy he has left to super speed towards the camera, and you see the classic, you know, 90s Flash symbol on his chest sort of engulf the screen, with the Danny Elfman 90s Flash theme. You know, playing in the background, and that ends the clip. But as he's sort of crawling along the ground, you can sort of make out a few of the dead bodies. Who did you spot?
I spotted most of them, to be honest with you, Adam. And any of our listeners, if you haven't, I have a couple tweets that I put out yesterday of every character that's there. The ones that I spotted right away were Stargirl, the Ray, the Hawk's helmet, the Green Arrow costume, Firestorm on his back. I want to say that was about it. And then going through the social media, I found that Obsidian from the JSA is even there.
Yeah, and Jesse Quick from The Flash.
Yeah, you could. It's harder to make out some of those. It just seemed like the DCCW went to Warner Brothers and was like, yeah, we need to open up the DC vault. If you can give us 2 minutes, then come in and get us, that's fine. We'll grab as many costumes as we can.
Yeah.
And they just start ripping from Legends is where we've seen Stargirl and Osmanius.
Yeah.
Smallville is when we've seen Green Arrow costume. And there is a Smallville Black Canary as well costume.
Yeah. Yeah. So things, I guess it didn't end well for Green Arrow being married to Chloe.
No, he obviously went to Black Canary, and then, well, I assume that he probably found out what Chloe was actually doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe got the hell out of there.
Yeah, I think she took her sexual escapades one step too far, and Ollie was the negative recipient of that. So it's a shame.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna see a Chloe scene.
Yeah, no, please no. But I thought that was a great little tease.
I thought that was fantastic. It brings everybody in, and if you're like us, like me and you, have watched all these shows that these characters were pulled from, it's just even more of an Easter egg. And that, when that Nani steam hits in for the Flash, oh, I could have jumped up through the ceiling. I was that excited.
And John Wesley Shipp looks still to this day great in that costume. That costume looks great.
The man doesn't age. He has a little bit on his hair, but my God, he looks like almost like he did when he was the Flash back in 1990.
All I kept thinking was, I wish the DC Universe streaming service would do a like a 10-episode revival of The Flash, the 90s Flash.
That is gold, that idea.
Do a 10-episode revival of Lois and Clark, right? And then basically what you have is you have that Flash training, you know, the more traditional ginger-haired Wally West. You have Lois and Clark now have a child, John Kent, who is Superboy. And you could spin off into another show with those two.
Oh, I agree. I think it just depends on the TV rights for those shows. I don't know.
Both of those are owned by Warner Brothers, so it's not an issue.
I know, but the distribution, if it's actually on cable, there could be whatever. I don't know who. I can't remember what channel or what cable station had the rights to the Flash.
Lois and Clark was ABC.
Yeah. So maybe they still have rights.
Well, no, because they're now affiliated with Disney.
Oh, so all their TV holds.
So that would free up, whatever license they had with everybody else, so they would be freed. And then CBS distributed The Flash. But then, remember, CBS is a co-owner with Warner Bros. Of the CW, so I don't think there would be an issue.
I guess that's why it was so easy to get John Wesley Shipp's Flash rather than Dean Cain in for Superman.
Well, I think they just didn't use Dean Cain because he was already on Supergirl, which I mean, John Wesley Shipp was already on the
Flash as Jay Garrick.
But it's more like the concept of, you know, alternate universe is more fluid to the Flash than
Supergirl. Oh yeah, you're right there. Like, so all the Flash fans will get an idea. They kind of have an idea anyway. Oh, he must be from a different Earth.
And I just don't think that. Unfortunately, the CW, specifically Supergirl, wants to work with Dean Cain again because, you know.
Yeah, I seen an article about that. Like, he just has his own opinions. I know some of them aren't that good, but
at the end of the day, politics is politics. The guy can act.
And they left a pretty big plot hole open.
Yeah.
With him leaving and never coming back. Yeah. Like, that's Alex's father.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. So
when you think about it, that's Alex's father, and he's never coming back for another episode. And they left when we left him, he was on under duress from Cadmus. Yes, Cadmus.
Yeah,
like he was being controlled by Cadmus, and it was like, oh, okay, there's nothing else about it. So, I'm sorry, but Kara as a character and Supergirl as a character wouldn't rest until she found her adopted father.
Right. Yeah, so I'd be all for that idea of having two 10-episode revival seasons and then spinning it off into, like, you know, Kid Flash and
Superboy
kind of show.
That's a pretty good idea, actually.
I would even go, like, look, have corporate synergy on the DC streaming service. Call it Young Justice, right? And you could bring in another one of the Robins. Like, maybe not, obviously.
Tim Drake.
Yeah, even better. Go the next run and use Damian. Because look, Batman exists on Titans, right? We already have a Jason Todd. Eventually, we could get to Damian and bring him in to the fold. So it's not out of the realm of doability, right? So if I was them, I'd consider it.
That idea. That sounds like a pretty good idea. And makes the main thing that we're going to say here is that there's so many possibilities for them going forward, Adam.
Yeah, it's crazy. So those are my ideas. Warner Bros., you're free to take them. I wouldn't even charge you for them. I wouldn't even ask for payment.
If anyone's listening, can we have a live action Batman show?
All I ask is that if you're going to use my ideas, just pass along my number to Margot Robbie, and we're all good. Of course, in Earth 3 show, it has my number, but that's a different story. One more piece of TV news before we get to our review. And that last piece of news is that, according to Discussing Film, the Batwoman pilot episode is eyeing a filming start date of April 2019. So that means we should be hearing about casting for other roles in relatively early into the new year.
Yeah, I think the ball will get rolling on this after the crossover. I got a feeling Batgirl is going to be very well received, or Batwoman, sorry, is going to be very well received, and I think that that'll just push people to be on social media asking, like, where's my Batwoman show? I want it, I want it. And I got a feeling that'll get the ball rolling even more.
I think that's all it was. I mean, there's no point in it. Like, focus your energy on promoting the crossover and then announce the casting for the pilot episode, like the other characters. There's no point in doing that all now.
No, it's just, you just back yourself into a corner where it may be down the line when you're ready to start filming, there's a better or a higher quality actor or actress that you wanted that you could get now, but instead you backed yourself into a corner with the crossover, so you have this person already in the role.
So I think it was only a matter of time before we got news on that, and I think it's going to come shortly after the episode airs. And then, well, into the new year. So it's good, but it's good that is on the horizon filming-wise. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it looks like if it starts filming in April, we'll probably see it in the fall.
Yeah.
Fall premiere date seems pretty certain.
Yeah. So, again, like everything else we've mentioned, we'll keep you posted on all of this. And now it's time to get into the next review of the of Batman the Animated Series. So, of course, this episode is Cat in the Claw Part 2. The episode description, Travis, what do you think? One or two sentences?
One.
You're bang on. Because God forbid whoever writes these at IMDb puts a little bit more effort into these things. But it is what it is. And here is that description. Batman and Catwoman must work together to stop Red Claw from releasing a viral plague outside of Gotham. It's pretty straightforward, but it's actually pretty accurate. So, Travis, what did you think of this episode? What were some of the things you liked?
I really enjoyed this episode, Adam, especially compared to the first one. I found the first one a little bit more slow-moving, but they had to build the characters like Batman, Catwoman, and Red Claw, so I could understand why it was a little bit slower. But we get a lot more action in this one. We get Batman and his interaction with the mob, but what really stands out for me is his relationship with Catwoman.
Yeah.
We kind of think through the episode that he would let Catwoman go. He's more understanding to her, and he doesn't be this close to another person until we see Talia al Ghul, and that's not until I think season 3. So I enjoyed their interactions and the partnership that they had to form just to stop Red Claw. But like I said before, the probably my favorite thing about this episode is the end scene where Batman cuffs Catwoman when she doesn't even expect it. And she asks her if he cares for her. And he responds, more than you'll ever know. And I thought that was just such a great scene. And he do care for her, but he doesn't care for her more than he cares for justice for Gotham City. And he knows that she committed crimes. So I just love that. And that just gives us such a in-depth showing of what Batman's true character is. Mm. So that was probably my favorite scene of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Their teamwork and their interaction is pretty solid in this episode. But also, the moment that you speak of where he puts the cuffs on her and tells her that he cares for her, that is a moment that is right out of, it's a nod to Batman 66, because there was an episode where he arrests her much in a similar manner. So, you know, she says, you know, we could be together and you know, we could just run away together. We could be together. You know, don't you care about me and all that? And he's like, of course I do, but, you know, maybe in another life where you weren't a criminal and this and that. And then he puts the cuffs on her. So it was a very similar similar scene. And I think that was Bruce Timm and Paul Dini and everybody behind the scenes kind of making a nod to that. The other thing I noticed, so that was very good. I like that callback to Batman's past in television, which is good. Another thing I noticed was there's the scene at the beginning where Batman tries to intercept Red Claw, and you know they're basically getting into a fight on top of a train. Do you notice a continuing trend of superhero battles on trains? Like, this is...
Yes, I have. We kind of see it almost everywhere. And yeah. I want to tell people to go watch Archer. There's an episode, I can't remember what season, but he fights a guy. They're on the train the entire episode. And all he's saying is, I want to fight somebody on top of the train. Like, it's one of my dreams. And when he gets up on top of the train, the wind and the force is just so crazy that he can't even stand up. And he's like, that's not how they show it in the movies at all. So that's the first thing I think about when people are up on the train. I'm like, you know, maybe Batman could do it, but I don't, well, you know.
Like, think about it. Batman Begins, the fight on the train, right?
Yeah.
They were inside the train, but nonetheless. On a train. We had Spider-Man 2, fight on a train, right? We had the Wolverine. It was a fight on top of the train. So, it's... And now this, it's a recurring... It seems to be a recurring trope, which is fine. It was cool. But and the fact that she gets away. So, like, even as good as Batman is, you know, he's not perfect. And he can't... Like, it wasn't a quick... You know, they made Red Claw very formidable for... Especially for a villain that, to my knowledge, was in the comics. They made her a pretty strong villain.
She was introduced in the series, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. The other cool part for me was the way... Two things. When Bruce Wayne went to pick up Selina, in the car he's on the phone with Gordon... Like he's talking as Batman. That was cool.
Yeah, that was a nice nod.
To see him do the whole talking as Batman, but as also doing something as Bruce Wayne. That was cool. And then the other part was when he figures out that Selina Kyle is Catwoman. Because Alfred finds a hair on his Bruce Wayne's jacket, and then he goes, "Oh, it must be Miss Kyle's," and he said, "No, it's not hers." But Batman's seen this before, and it was the cat, the black cat, right? And
yeah,
so that was a clever way. You know, it was cool to see that he knew who she was.
Just shows Batman's intelligence. And I want to piggyback off your point there about Red Claw. I found that she was fantastic. That it was a great villain to introduce, only to never use her ever again in the show.
Yeah, that's too bad.
That's too bad. Because she was, she's not as iconic as a Mr. Freeze or a Joker or anything like that. But she was both, she had a presence with her brains and her brawn.
Yeah.
She was like pretty imposing. And she seemed like a perfect, like, she was really worthy to be in a, like, a villain versus Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah.
I thought that she was fantastic, and I wish we would have seen more of her in an episode in the future as well.
Yeah, it would have been nice, but yeah.
Still great.
In the two episodes she was in, she the character and the voice actress, Kate Mulgrew, acquitted themselves very well.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. But the voice work is usually...
Yeah. And of course,
on this show as well.
She was from Star Trek Voyager. She was the captain, right?
Oh, okay.
So there's that. But I think that's pretty much all I want to say about the episode. Is there anything you want to add before we give a rating?
Nope, that's good enough for me.
All right, so what would be your letter grade for this episode?
Ooh, I would give it a B+.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really solid episode. And I think that's a fair grade. I think I'm going to go along with you and echo your sentiments and give it a B+. It was the Batman and Catwoman stuff, and even the Gordon stuff, which we didn't mention, the little bits of Gordon where he's having a battle of wits with the
not a normal villain that we're used to seeing, but yeah. A good villain nonetheless.
Yeah, so all in all, a solid B+ all around. And I think that's going to do it for this episode and your first episode as the co-host of this show.
Yeah, it was super fun. It was nice to get my feet wet.
Yeah. So what we usually do is remind people that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, which is hosted by the fine folks at Batman on Film. So if you want to continue the Batman podcast listening today, you can go over there and take your pick of different fantastic Batman podcasts. You can also interact with Travis and I via social media. So Travis, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at Travis_156. You can just drop me a line and we can chat DC or pretty much anything comic book related. I'm always down to chat about. So, or any questions or anything like that. Never too busy to interact.
Awesome. And if you want to interact with me, there are two ways you can do that. You can either go to the Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast Facebook page, send a request, and we will add you, and we can talk there. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi, and we can talk about DC, Marvel, anything you want. So please reach out, and we hope to start taking questions in the near future as the podcast continues along. That's something I want to do more of as well. So, but we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we hope that you will come along for the ride that is going to be the new and improved Multiverse Musings DC Comics podcast, but also the expanding network of podcasts that this show has and will birth going into 2019. But that's it for this week, and until next episode, we hope you have a wonderful week or a wonderful day, depending on when you're listening to this episode. And until next week, so long, everybody.
See you guys.